This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education, by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
We are so excited about our next guest. In fact, sorry, Charlie, if I missed the cue because we were talking with him. Over the next week or so, just big broad picture, we're going to be hearing from some of the big media companies when it comes to earnings. Of course, Netflix already reported a blockbuster report thanks to a massive subscriber beat. When it comes to the media names, it's about grabbing eyeballs, boosting and holding on to subscribers by giving them great content. And our next guest, Tim, really gets his space in a big way.
Yeah, he's been in it as it's evolved in a really big way, from traditional broadcast and linear to TV to the explosion in streaming and mobile, DVDs, everything. Josh Sapin is the former president and CEO of AMC Networks. You know him from such hits as Mad Men, Breaking Bad, The Walking Dead. It was spun off from Cablevision, Carol, back in 2011, and he's got a new book out.
I love it. The title, Third Act. I think about my third act because I'm still in my first act. Reinventing Your Next Chapter. Josh Sapin is in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
We have so much to talk about. Do you still like the media world when you look back at it? Do you think it's just kind of unbelievable and what it was, what it's become, what it continues to evolve?
It's wonderful, and I can't get enough television. My wife and I sit down every night.
Seriously?
And think, no joke, actually. Particularly new shows. There's this abundance of shows, and I think television, many would agree, what goes on the screen at home has come to dominate so much of the conversation. And so we sit down frequently and say, what do you want to watch?
What are you watching?
Tell us. That's what I wanted to know.
God, well, it's a bit, you know, honestly, it's Academy Award season. Okay. After saying that, so I'm trying to be current as a voter.
You are? Okay.
Yeah, on everything that might be,
so you have
that
all
I might
this,
vote
you
for.
Have,
so,
you have all the screeners.
So I've been racking them up. Well, they're also sort of findable, but okay. I do have access to them. Okay. So, you know, everything from Pinocchio to Tar to Babylon to Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, to the list goes on, a spectacular list, and then documentaries, and then foreign films, and so there's not enough time.
What about like quote unquote TV these days? Because TV these days is such a loose definition,
right? Do you watch linear?
It's like, well, no, I don't even mean linear.
What do you mean?
I mean like, you know, HBO,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Weekly, or a Netflix series drops all at once on Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, what are you binging? What are you streaming that's
sure.
not
sure. Well,
movie?
I have particular affection for AMC because of time and time there. And so the AMC bought the Anne Rice Library, and so Mayfair Witches and is new, and Interview with the Vampire is wonderful, and as well as finishing up the end of Better Call Saul, Dark Winds, and the list goes really on.
No Better Call Saul spoilers, please.
And on. So it's wonderful. But we do, of course, watch HBO, Netflix, Apple, et cetera, et cetera.
Josh, how do you feel about, like, it's funny, I watched Bad Sisters, which I adored. I don't know if you saw it, but I watched it week to week because it was one, and it was kind of fun to look forward to when it came out, and I hadn't done that. I mean, so often something gets dumped and I just sit there for hours. Do you like that model? Do you think it's a smart model? Do you think it's better that we're kind of waiting for something every week?
Well, I would defer to today's experts who are deep in the belly of the beast and can understand the implications of all that. I will just say, as a consumer, I don't mean this to be in any sense cute. I like it both ways.
You do?
You know, yeah, I like to binge shows, and then I can talk about something that was on Hulu, which is my wife and I liked a show called The Patient with Steve Carell. I think a wonderful show, FX on Hulu, and we anxiously awaited watching new episodes each week. So I think it's wonderful both ways, depending upon the content. The business imperatives behind it are what they are, and people who are closer to it today can tell you more than I can.
I do think about like the explosion and just the demand for content and what that has done for directors, producers, actors, yeah. right? I mean, actors who would you think only go on the big screen, right? Yeah. Like to have a series on one of the streaming services, it's a really cool thing and I think we all benefit. But how do you think about the evolution if you go back to your early days,
yeah.
right? When you, I forget the name of the firm, but it became Time Warner Cable. Like it's hard to think about what it was
yeah.
and what it's become.
Well, I grew up really in a desert of television. A paucity of anything that was worthwhile. There were rare
Norman
exceptions.
Lear, who's in your book, well, which actually, we will get to, would maybe beg to differ.
Worth to talk about, because actually he was a really notable exception.
Yeah.
Another person in the book named Bill Persky,
yeah.
who really featured strong women in his comedies, and is, happens to be a dear personal friend, so I'm very attached to both him and his extraordinary work, which began with Dick Van Dyke and Kate Nelly. So, but it was a different world, and it really was, if not desert, it was desert with few oases. And today it is land of abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a wonderful land of abundance for creative expression.
Do you think, forgive me, Tim, but I just want to jump in. Do you think we're getting better in terms of diversity and really serving different audiences?
You know, I'd like to think yes. I really would like to think yes, rather emphatically. And, you know, shows are coming to mind
yeah.
that are really portraying people who look like the world. They don't look like a different world. And I think that's a virtuous, wonderful, and really truly, truly important thing, because media is so,
yeah.
it actually gets inside people's skin. And so if they see an embrace of diverse people, I think it really helps and influences behavior rather profoundly. I'll tell you an anecdote. Another person who's
yeah,
in the book
please. Is
ex-Senator Governor Bob Kerry,
yeah.
who went on to be university president
yeah.
and then banker and is also, I should say, a poet along the way and was earlier a pharmacist mm-hmm. and military person. And
I think there's a fourth and a fifth act in there, but that's okay.
Yeah, exactly right. But he made a comment. We were fortunate enough years ago to have been involved with a show in its early years called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Loved it.
And Bob commented that that show when he was in Nebraska had perhaps more to do with defanging homophobia
wow.
than some legislation, because it made humans seem familiar who were different. And I think
yeah.
one sees that, you know, in theater, you see it in books, you see it particularly in TV, which is in your home every day.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
You said theater. You run a theater. You own a theater as
yeah,
well in Greenport.
Yeah.
You really love media and content, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I want to talk about.
What's not to like?
I know.
Well, I think there is some stuff that has a lot of people concerned in the idea of short form stuff and watching on your phone. A study back in October by Omdia said that TikTok overtook Netflix to become the second most popular service in the U.S. YouTube was at the top when it came for people under 35 watching. Does that concern you at all?
You know, I'm not sure I am an authority on what the impact of short form and TikTok.
But from the perspective of art, from the perspective of, you know, what we are consuming.
You know, I guess, truly, if you don't mind, again, don't let me feign authority. I think...
Let's be honest. You know a thing or two about media. You've been in this space
The social implications of it, the social implications, the long-term social implications of media... Social, not, and even on art, are hard to predict. I'll offer a couple of comments, if I may.
Please.
One is that I think it's rich and wonderful that younger people can create. I mean that. I don't mean that just to be great, great media. I think people, young people, kids are at home, and they may be fashioning sort of expertise and careers in media by it was making YouTube videos and making TikTok videos. And I think it is an on-ramp to being creative people because they're learning tools. No kidding.
I've seen it in my family with two nieces.
So I think it's a sort of wonderful thing. And, you know, I think then there's a whole subject about implications of and social implications of, and I think one might need a sociologist or an anthropologist to talk about and figure out all that.
You've talked about some of the people in the book. Tell us, first of all, why you wanted to write this and put it together.
Sure. So thank you for asking. So about 3 or 4 years ago, as I contemplated the end of a conventional career, I...
Was that hard?
Well, yeah, because I loved it so much. Great company, great place, great people, great shows, and very attached to it. And but there's an inevitable time to do something different.
Right.
And... So I just began to observe people, some of them like me, some different in what they did if they had the benefits of continued health and a degree of means that gave them some flexibility. And I became a little interested in what do you do after you do what you do if you have that opportunity? And right. So I began to observe sort of the good, the bad, the indifferent, and the spectacular. And so I thought it was a good subject maybe, and I'll... see if I can write a book about it. And so I presented it to a publisher and they said, okay. So there we go.
How do you think about it in the context of your own career though, of your own third act?
Well,
like, is this book your third act? Is this book a second act?
That would be a little meta. Look, what are you doing? Well, I wrote the book. That's it. I think it's a part of it, but I have some things that I'm starting to do that have been pretty appealing to me. I've been working, I mentioned to you, Columbia University, and I've been volunteering actually at the Fortune Society with people who have been recently released from prison, which a friend of mine is involved with, and working on making some independent films, which is near and dear to my heart. I was at Sundance last week. And so a bunch of different things.
I think it's so important because I do think there are people who get through some really significant accomplishments, you know, and maybe think that's it. And then you realize, wait, you got another runway. You got more things you can do. Some of the names in your book, Josh, are definitely household names. We would know who they are. Some of them aren't. Go through some of the names. And,
sure.
And I'm curious how you decided the list.
Sure. Well, you know, I worked with a wonderful editor who has great judgment and I think helped craft the balance of the book. And she and I thought that it would be good to have a mix of people who are well-known and who one would recognize. Robert Redford, I mentioned Sundance, was a painter, an actor. His first film direction job was, he won an Academy Award for Ordinary People and obviously an environmentalist and really then gave freedom to independent film through the Institute. The festival's better known, so he's involved. Alan Alda, remarkable guy.
That's
who
great.
I had the privilege of meeting. People my age know him as Hawkeye MASH, but he went on to do 8 years of a science show on public television and then set up the Alda Institute for Communications and trained no fewer than 5,000 doctors in how to communicate better.
Incredible.
It's a pretty darn remarkable
use
of time and sort of agency. And Gloria Steinem really needs no summary. She sort of speaks for herself, I think, just sort of the modern feminist.
How did the people who you profiled, who you write about, come to mind for you? Did you tap into your own network?
I did a bit.
That process.
I did a bit. And then I had the help of a woman named Ellie Strauss, who did some research. She's a friend of my daughter, actually, and she's a teacher.
Nice.
And so I was able to impose upon her and say, do you have some downtime? Because she's a very bright young woman. And so she did some research, and we found people who were not known at all. There are 45 of those.
Yeah.
And they're just great to read about. I'll mention a couple. I was saying it when we were talking, Hope Hartley worked, she's 72. She had a career at Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
She had attended the Brooklyn Children's Museum as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then she founded as the chair, the Bronx Children's Museum that opened its concrete doors a couple of months ago, it was reported in the New York Times. Jamal Joseph grew up in New York. He was got into some trouble twice. He became a Black Panther. He served some hard federal time and then got degrees and advanced degrees while in prison, taught at Columbia, and then developed this thing called Impact Theater, which really advances kids and teaches them theater, and it's immensely helpful to them. There's more fanciful people, a guy named Art Schill, who became a stand-up comedian at in his late 70s. How wild is
that? Well, I love, there's also, I think, a woman who became a flight attendant in her 50s, somebody who became a firefighter.
Yes.
I love those stories.
You know, they're just, they actually just elevate me.
Yeah.
You know, to think, I'm going to go be a firefighter.
Well, it's so funny because we had a guest earlier in the week, and I'm not being critical, but was talking about that by the time you're 45, you're middle-aged and nobody wants to hire you. And then to see the third act, you know, just there are people who are so productive well into their 80s, 90s.
Yeah, and they're doing, there's a guy named Leonard Tao who is 95, 94 or 5, who is doing, it's indescribable what he is doing with his time and resource.
What did the research of the book and writing the book, putting it together and learning about all these people teach you about the way that you want to spend this time?
Yeah, well, I think if there was, I guess, a lesson in it, it was for me, sort of don't lay on the couch. It's not agreeable anyway. And don't watch too much television.
I was just going to say, wait. We started talking about watching.
Don't watch too much television. Maybe don't watch daytime television or don't binge during the day. Get out of the house.
Unless it's Bloomberg TV.
Unless it's Bloomberg TV. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it is interesting in this time post-pandemic where it's like, go live life.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really honestly the few little things I've done, which sound, they're inconsequential in the scope of things, but they've been, for me, I'm not so sure they're helping anybody in the world. I hope a teeny bit. They're certainly making my eyes open to the world, because my world has been pretty, I wouldn't say monolithic, but familiar for a very long period of time.
We really enjoyed this, and good luck with the book. And when you're on your third act or fourth act or whatever, come back and come talk with us again.
Thanks so much for having me.
We wish you well. Josh Sapin, he's former president and CEO of AMC Networks. Check out his book. I put it out on Twitter. Josh, his new book is The Third Act, Reinventing Your Next Chapter. So delighted to have him here in the studio. Thanks again.
The Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit returns to London on April 25th for a solutions-driven look at the sustainable business and finance landscape, looking at the latest trends in ESG regulations, supply chain innovation, and transition finance. Speakers include leaders from CDP, Emirates Environment Group, Seedtrace, COA, and more. Summit advisors include City Commercial Bank, Red Sea Global, and Schneider Electric. Visit BloombergLive.com/SBS2024 to learn more.